Blog Talk Radio.
My mic is on.
Daylight come and me want go.
Well, wouldn't you know it? Aaron, where are you? Jared Harris, where are you? Gary Grubb, where are you? Where are you guys, you National Lacrosse League fanatics, especially the Toronto Rock? Here I am talking to Christopher Jones in Texville, and he's wondering, why aren't you doing the Canadian Football League? You know, you canceled the one on Monday. Yeah, well, the one on Monday had to be canceled because it just had to happen. There were no other options. So I'll call Aaron. He's always safe. Aaron and I have this thing about lacrosse, and we want to do our best to enhance the lacrosse experience for all parties. Let's see if he answers the phone. Let's just check. I love doing it like this. Aaron!
Frank, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Okay, let's do a show about lacrosse. I got to find out if Chris wants to come on. He's one of my football buddies. Mondays and Fridays, we do Canadian Football League. This is our second National Lacrosse League show, at least for the season 2014, even though we were on before Christmas and New Year's. Let me ask first before we move on with the show and I start reciting some information for the folks out there. How was your Christmas and New Year's? I know you weren't in Toronto.
Yes, I happened to be out on the East Coast. I was in a little town called New Glasgow out in Nova Scotia, and good Lord, was it cold.
Oh, you were out there with the snowbirds.
Yes, sir, I was. I think we got 18 inches of snow in 3 days.
Isn't Ann Murray from around them parts?
I believe so. We probably drove past the old family manse at some point. I don't recall. There was a lot of white. So,
yes. So you had fun?
Oh, most definitely I did, yeah.
Okay.
It was a really interesting trip. We actually, we were 6.5 hours late getting into Halifax because of the snow, and we were actually bumped on our flight back because they needed a plane for a flight to Newfoundland.
Cool.
Yeah.
Now, it just so happens, I believe, are the Rock in Buffalo tonight?
I don't think so. They don't play any Wednesday.
Friday
they are, yes.
Yeah, I'm so used to us doing the show on Fridays that I got this mental thing going on. Yeah, last year it was we did the show on Fridays, which was on the same night that The Rock played, which was okay, but it meant that I didn't get to watch the game. It was either watching.
Which was rather unfortunate. I really would have liked to have had you out for more of them.
Well, it's still going to be hard this year because if Christopher Jones and company have their way, I won't be leaving. I'll be doing the CFL show on Fridays, so I don't know how this is all going to work out, but good news is I'm learning how to be a lacrosse fan more and more every year, and I've drawn this simple conclusion, and I want the people out there to know. You just go to www.nll.com, and you'll read everything you need to know about lacrosse, the National Lacrosse League. And what I want to tell you most importantly why you need to know that is that, unfortunately, well, let's go to the news first. Let me do some news here, and I'm kind of perturbed. I saw the TV schedule, and I was not impressed. I must say that.
Yeah, they've apparently cut back this year. It hasn't been
five games all year.
Looks to be that way, which is rather unfortunate. You know, I was hoping for more because they carried 10 games last year.
But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You know why it doesn't matter? Because of what I just said. You go to WWNLL.com. And they have there the scores of the games. And beside the scores of the games, if you happen to like the score that your team put up there, you know, like if let's say you're the type of person that doesn't like to watch your team lose, you get to know in advance. And if you like that they won, then you go over to the watch button, click the watch button. Guess what? you can watch the game. And McNamara and Stamp do the Toronto Rock games. I haven't looked at all the games yet. I watched the Vancouver game, the stealth game, against the Colorado Mammoth, and it was a pretty good game.
Westerveld's goal?
You know, it's great that they changed the rules so those goals could be scored.
This is true.
Right? And what we're referring to is, the over the back of the net goal. I believe that's what you were talking about, right?
That's right. Now, on ESPN's main website, they called it a dunk goal. The actual name, and those who have been fans of the league for quite a few years like myself, we usually refer to something like that as an air gate. And we call it an air gate because it's named after the twin brothers that popularized it, Paul and Gary Gate.
Ah, yes. Yes, I hear you. A lot like a reverse layup in basketball.
Exactly. The whole idea is the player starts behind the goal, puts it in over the goalie's shoulder and under the crossbar, and it's in the net and whatnot before the player touches the ground again.
And almost in a parallel universe, when the National Hockey League shrunk the back of the net, making that kind of play more possible along the ice as opposed to over the top of the net, but still shrinking the area that the player is limited to. In other words, shrinking the area that he can't be in, which makes it more possible for him to, or her, in female lacrosse as well, to dive over where they're not supposed to plant their foot to score a goal.
Exactly. It makes for more exciting lacrosse, too.
It sure does. It sure does. Now, for those of you that think that I'm a newcomer to lacrosse, no, I'm not a newcomer to lacrosse. I used to do the play-by-play for Rogers for the Toronto Beaches lacrosse for some, my goodness, must have been anywhere between 5 and 8 years. And I love lacrosse. Always have loved lacrosse and enjoyed watching it. Drifted away from it because, does happen for those of us that work for a living, sometimes you end up working 7 days a week, 60 hours, 10, 12 hours a day, and you don't get to do very much. And I lost my way when it came to lacrosse. I came back to the CFL, came back to lacrosse, and I'm very happy to be involved with both. Both have a lot of similarities for those of you that are tuning in that normally tune in for the CFL. It is very similar to the CFL in the sense that, as I said to my buddy here, Aaron, on the phone, look at the media as a guy in a room, you know, at school, the sock hop, right? Oh, I don't know if you guys even call it that nowadays. My old age is showing. And all the guys are always looking for the beautiful blonde. Nobody cares about the great lady that's there that would really be a great person to get to know and spend a lot of time with. So in a way, that's the suffering that the CFL and the NLL have. They are not acceptable American sports. So, to the extent that other sports are. So what happens is the media kind of floats away from it, not giving people who love the game an opportunity to see it at least to a reasonable level, as we discussed at the very beginning. But the good news is technology is such that even though major media outlets do not care about the CFL and the NLL, the National Lacrosse League, in the way I think they should, God bless TSN, on both counts. But it appears to me right now that while our friends in the CFL are getting a little more respect going in the right direction while the NLL is going in the wrong direction. Now, that sounds like a negative comment on my part, Aaron, but the fact remains we're here to support the league, and fortunately the league it does have a way for fans to watch their games, which would really make it hard to sell the game.
No, most definitely it would. The really good part is, and they've done it before, they tried it last year, I think, as an experimental year, and it worked really well, is they've set up something called the Lacrosse Network on YouTube.
That's right.
So,
which
watching games live,
I would like them to change the name, Aaron. I'm going to interrupt you because that is, I searched TLN, and
yeah.
I keep not understanding the language.
A little too much TLN Latino, hey?
Yeah, forget TLN, guys. Do not search it as TLN because TLN Latino will come out. Just the Lacrosse Network, T-H-E, Lacrosse Network, and it'll be fine. It'll be there. You'll go to their homepage, or even easier, www.nll. That's National Lacrosse League, the initials for that, .com, and everything's there. And as I said, if you look at the scores, you will see beside the scores, you will see, watch button, and you get to watch that game. So, yeah, thank goodness for that, and congratulations for them for doing their best to do the best they can in an unfortunate situation where, you know, we got to watch 400 baseball games, 350 hockey games, but there's no room for, you know, a lacrosse game once a week.
Though they do have plenty of room for poker.
But, you know,
and dart.
Like, you know, I almost understand poker. At least it's different types of poker. Do you know what I mean? Like,
no,
you know, the National Hockey League. Hmm?
This is true.
You know, it's at least it's different kinds of poker. It's just, you know, you look at the baseball season. Good Lord. Good Lord. You can watch 27 baseball games. And I'm talking on non-special channel. When I say specialty channel, I mean the ones that you have to pay, you know, $410 so that you can watch any baseball game. I'm not talking about those. I'm just talking about regular broadcast, Sportsnet. I don't know. Does TSN show any baseball? I think TSN shows baseball games as well. And then you know, you've got the American stations.
Yeah, I was going to say it's actually Rogers because they're the ones what own the Jays. But close enough for government work.
I mean all the games. Like,
oh,
games,
all the games, yeah.
Out the wazoo. And you know, the whole reason for them getting all these channels, which they're showing the same thing on anyway, the whole motivation was so that there would be diversity out there. And, you know, the CFL and the NLL have to really struggle to create a market for themselves so they can be seen. There aren't enough channels to show these games, those teams as well, or discuss the game and have shows that discuss the game. And I guess, you know, it's all about... They're all after the same dollar, you know, the same dollar that's out there. The football dollar is there, and it goes to the NFL. And they're all fighting for, you know, those massive amounts of viewers. But when they share the games, when you look at how much the games draw, the Canadian Football League does great. So TSN smartened up, and now they're actually going to do good things with the CFL. If only we can get now the lacrosse part of the equation going, and that's what we're going to do on the show. We're going to try and sell at least one or two more tickets a season by the time the show's over.
That's definitely
that's
the goal, although I do have to admit there were a couple people in my building that went and saw a game for the first time at the home opener, and they got down to their seats and realized that some of the people sitting next to them were two of the people that my friend works with and a couple guys from high school that he hadn't seen in about 5 or 6 years.
That's fantastic.
Took about a half before he and his girlfriend went out and got season tickets. So,
well, two things happened at that first Rock game, and that is they picked up where they left off with attendance, around 11,000 people, a little more than 11,000. And the other thing that happened was they didn't pick up where they left off in the last game that the fans were there at the ACC to witness, which was the disaster that was the end of the playoffs in the first round, losing to the Minnesota Swarm. So in actuality, they did a great job of, you know, playing the kind of game they should have played, you know, that night. They came out strong in the very beginning and really did live on the fact that they did get a quick start. And that had to be rewarding for the fans after what they saw the last time they were at the ACC.
Yeah, I mean, I still kind of get shivers when I think about how poorly they played in that game, but... You know, the good news is they're going to a two-game format this year, so it means that there's a chance. If you have a stinker of a game, you have a chance to get back into it. With the new playoff format, the way it works is the higher-ranked team is the visiting team for the first game, and then the second game is played at the higher-ranked team's home. If the series ends up tied 1-1, there's a 5-minute break, and then they play 10-minute mini-games until the winner is decided.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I'm feeling, you know what? I'm feeling really cool. In fact, I might say that I'm feeling kind of groovy.
Hello.
Gary Groove is on the phone with us.
Hey, Gary. Hi,
here I am live. How are you?
Very good. That was a pretty good game. The Rock actually did a pretty good job, didn't they?
I love what they did. I thought they came up with a lot of jump. I thought they caught Calgary completely flat-footed. And then Calgary started reverting back to the old take dumb penalties, and we just capitalized throughout the night.
And they did get a jump, and they hung on quite well. And Poulin, who was previously advertised as a pretty, what do they call him, the Poulin Wall?
His nickname in Calgary is the pool in wall.
Yeah.
But
he had a rough start, but he really, you know, he kept them in that game in the third and fourth quarters.
Perfect. Just what I like to hear. So it felt good to have a game like that after last year's finale, right, Gary?
Well, yeah, definitely. It's a nice taste in our mouth after landing on it was a long afternoon, shall we say, against Minnesota. I'm curious when you start getting some of the younger teams who have a lot of jump also, how we react. But
yeah,
I like what I saw. I thought the new moves were terrific.
The Rock only have like six new guys, right? They're pretty much a veteran team right now.
So they had to plug a couple holes when Woods and Manning decided to hang them up, but I think they've done well in plugging the holes that they left behind. Just wanted to mention, The Rock actually had, according to what I've got here, 60 shots on goal on Pooley, and he let in 16. Going the other way, 51 shots on goal on Nick Rose. So,
okay.
A lot of crap.
We have to find some people who are fans of other teams as best we can, and I think the best shot we got is with some Buffalo fans, and we'll hope to get them on at some point so we can start having some fun with, discussing the teams from a fan perspective. I'll mention a couple of the transactions to get us up to date as far as this week is concerned. The Philadelphia Wings, they signed Bill McGlone to a practice player list. And after this, we'll have Aaron explain. You can explain to us all these different levels of on the team. The Toronto Rock, they've signed Nick Diachenko to the practice player list. What's a practice player list?
Well, that's a separate list that they have. It's kind of like their call-ups. They have to have 20 players, 20 active players listed on their roster, so usually 18 runners and two goalies. These are the other players that are either coming back off injury or that they'd like to have additional time to evaluate or even call-ups.
And they shrunk the players during the game. They, I think they're playing now with two less players or something?
It used to be 23 players for the active roster, so 21 runners and two goalies. They've shrunk it now to 18 runners and two goalies. So your players are going to be spending more time on the floor, which means you have to go with a younger, slightly more athletic and faster team.
Yeah, and the versatility of the players will become more important as well.
Exactly. So those with wider skill sets will become more valuable as the season goes on.
Perfect.
Aaron, you can probably answer this for me. On the practice squad, other teams are available to sign them, kind of like what we did with Brendan Tannhaus a couple of years back, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of like waivers. So, I mean, you'll find Bill McGlone may have been signed to the practice player list by Philadelphia, but other teams, I think, will have the opportunity to pick him up. The one thing that you're going to notice, Rochester Nighthawks placed Angus Goodley, a goalie, back on the active roster. They took him off the physically unable to perform list for an evaluation period. Same thing with John Sullivan. They brought him there. He was on the holdout list. He wasn't going to be playing.
Yeah, we'll get to some of those. The Philadelphia Wings have signed Eric Hoffman to the practice player list, which we've discussed what it is. They also signed Michael Deal to the practice player list this week. The Rochester Nighthawks placed Angus Goodleaf on the active roster evaluation period from the list. Evaluation period and active roster. I mean, active roster is pretty simple, but what's the evaluation period?
That one I'm actually still a little unsure of myself. I tried checking in the LAX 101 section before we started, but there's not a lot of details. It's a temporary waiver for them to go over the player cap if they want to work them into a few practices and maybe see if they can't get them some floor time during a game without having to place another player back on the injured reserve list or the physically unable to perform list.
Okay, because they also, and it might have something to do with how many injuries they have, to give them an opportunity to at least be able to field a full complement of a team. And they also John Sullivan is another guy they put on the active roster evaluation period, same thing.
And the Toronto Rock, they made three moves this week. They placed Pat Merrill and Bill Greer on the injured reserve list, second level. What is second level?
I think it depends on the severity of the injury. First level would be expected to be back in a couple of weeks.
Okay, so longer-term injury.
Exactly.
Fair enough.
Now, and again, that's a way of, I think, it's kind of underhanded, but I think it might be a way of stashing players for use later.
Okay.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
And besides, they're obviously hurt for a more extended period, or they don't feel they'll need them for an extended period.
Exactly. Now, if there's anybody listening out there that cares to prove me wrong, by all means, please call in.
That's what the program's for, of course. You're listening to Candid Frank Live, the National League, National Lacrosse League, and as always, with what I like to do and the kind of programming I like to perform, I do it for the fans. And I go on the assumption that the more you understand a game, even at some of the silly levels like this, the more interesting it is. And I find a lot of people enjoy learning about the game that they like, the little bit of stuff and information that they get. It really does make being a fan a little more interesting. So also, as I said, the Rock, on another move, they place practice player Mike Lumwalker on the active roster. So as a practice player, he's not deemed a player on the roster, and now they've moved him to the roster, which sounds pretty self-explanatory.
I think so.
Oh, okay. Gee, that one seemed easy to me, and I'm surprised at the hesitation in your voice. Gary, do you have anything to add to that?
It's not something I really think about a lot, Frank.
Okay. It's okay, but like you
know?
Said, you can... This is the whole point
of
what
he's on the roster.
Said.
He was wearing a jersey the other night. He was on the floor.
Yeah, he was. No, because this goes back to the sixth, okay? So they also placed A.J. Masson on the active roster from the practice player list as well. Going back further on the fifth, the Rochester Nighthawks have signed James Purvis to the practice player list. The Minnesota Swarm have signed Corbin Tau to the practice player list. So those are the transactions that have happened this week. And
well, that shows you
how
deep Minnesota is. If he's on the practice list, he's a pretty damn good player.
Exactly. And while they didn't win the championship last
year. And they're full of
first-round
picks from everywhere for the next few years, so they're going to be an up-and-coming team to watch for.
And that leads me – a great segue, by the way, Gary, because the next question I was going to ask is, when the season started and when I was preparing myself to do this, I assumed that the Minnesota Swarm would be in the Western Division. It turns out they moved them to the Eastern Division along with the Buffalo Bandits, Philadelphia Wings, Rochester Nighthawks, and the Toronto Rock, the local team here. And they abandoned the Western Division, which includes the Calgary Roughnecks, the Colorado Mammoth, the Edmonton Rush, and the Vancouver Stealth. Can either of you give me the logic or why they moved Minnesota, which has a Western kind of feel location-wise?
The only thing I can really think of would be to get a more geographical distinction. I know Minnesota is still 18 hours away by car and 6 hours by plane, but it feels like they're trying for a more geographic feel to everything. Calgary, Colorado, Edmonton, and Vancouver, those are all west coast, whereas Minnesota is more middle of the road.
I don't know if they're two steps ahead of us and maybe are trying to look to expand.
There you
it's
go.
Further in the West Coast.
There
entirely
you go.
And finally have something in the works out there where you can get a fifth team there, and then Minnesota would be over here anyways.
Well, rumor
I'm
had
hoping.
It that there was going to be a team in Seattle.
There you go.
That would be perfect
Seattle
for
before,
the fifth,
wasn't
right?
There? There was a team there, wasn't there?
Well, it was in Washington.
Was in Everett, Washington. Not quite Seattle.
Oh, okay.
I think they would have done a lot better if they would have been in Seattle proper because they would have had a lot more base to draw from.
The only real issue I have with that is there's one arena in Portland, in Seattle that's actually appropriate for hockey, and the Supersonics used to play there with the overhang over the end. You would miss a third of the defensive zone, I think.
There, you know, I think if you are listening and paying attention to the National Hockey League, which from time to time I do because I can't help it, I can't help myself, there is the issue of Seattle. One of the reasons why the National Hockey League has done the same thing that the National Lacrosse League just did, there are two less teams in the Western Division in the National Hockey League as well. And there is a discussion that Seattle, the Supersonics, will reappear in the NBA. Along with them will be a National Hockey League franchise, and it would only make sense that if there is any interest in lacrosse, you know, there's another now where there used to be, what is it, 8 home games? Now there's 9 home games. So mm-hmm. another 9 yeah. dates for a stadium.
Now, you see, that to me would make the most sense. I mean, if you're going to bring something back, go big. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, granted.
Plus, you can also do what they did in Buffalo and Calgary yeah. and have the same owners own both teams and be a part of their season ticket package, which would also keep butts in the seats at a regular pace. And for an expansion team, that would be huge.
Oh, it would definitely be huge. It would give them a massive jump start, which is, I think, a lot of the problems that you find is teams have trouble gaining traction because they're not affiliated with other tenants in the arenas that they play in.
That's what happened to Boston. That's why Boston went away. They had such a terrible deal. There was no way that they could turn a profit, and in turn they folded.
Yeah, I mean, in order for Boston to actually have been able to turn a profit, they would have had to have, I think it was 12-5 in the seats every single game. And when you're only pulling 4.5-5, there's no earthly way you can do that.
No, and then you can't, the league, in lacrosse, what's the cut, like in the CFL we've learned that, you know, it's about 21, anywhere between 20 and 25,000 a team can make money. Do you guys have any idea what it's like for lacrosse?
Well, if you figure the average ticket price for a lacrosse game, and this is including the upper bowl, will run you about $40, and the salary cap for the season is $400,000. For a place like the Air Canada Centre, for 9 home dates, let's say 10 if they make the playoffs, you're going to need an average of about $75,000 per game. You're looking at about $1.3 million in total for the team. That's not including salaries for coaches and other staff. You're going to need about $1.3 million. So figure $1.3 million with an average attendance of 10,000 per game. That works out. Where's my calculator?
I'm just gonna say probably at a minimum of about 8,000-9,000, maybe like I'll put it this way. I think the Rock are on the border of making money with 11,000. Maybe they're making mm-hmm. a little bit. That'd be my guess.
Well, here's the way I
know Buffalo. They're making money. Places like Edmonton are kind of making me scratch my head on how they're doing anything because they're having real trouble drawing anybody.
Well.
Okay, figure.
Yeah.
Hold on, I got my calculator out. Here we go. Let's say $1.3 million. Okay, that's lowballing it slightly, but we'll go with $1.3 million for the time being. Now,
okay.
For in order to make $1.3 million over 9 home dates, you have to average $144,000 a game. Figure the average. What would you say is the average ticket price for the lower bowl, Gary?
For the lower bowl, probably about $50.
Okay, so divide that by 50, and you're looking at approximately 3,000 people per game. Now, that doesn't include other stuff that the Rock would have to pay.
Well, there's
equipment, transportation, sessions, per diem, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
That's just borderline.
All right, we've got another guest on the phone. Who do we have? Hello? Who's number 4 in the room? Okay, you can listen. His mic's live. When he gets back to the phone, maybe he's not close by. It looks like a Skype number to me. So, moving on. We know that the league is not getting the kind of attention from TSN it did last year. You know, it just might be an ebb and flow thing, and the excitement of getting another franchise in, which we're presuming is the reason why they've adjusted the East-West. Alignment. So let's talk a bit about the games that were played this week, and we'll start. The season started, of course, on the 28th. We're really in the middle of week, at the end of week one, but we've already started week two. They didn't exactly play in week one officially. I'm referring to the Rock. So we'll go back to the 28th, and we got the Wings were in Buffalo, and they won 17-13. That game
and
the first
score
Niagara
was a lot
Center.
Closer than that game was. That score was
Go
a
ahead.
Heck of a lot closer in the game.
Go for it, Gary. Elucidate.
I thought Philadelphia looked terrific in that game, and I thought Buffalo came up completely flat.
So
I expected a little bit more
score,
of a Troy Coringley coached team.
The score was flattering for Buffalo. Is that what you're saying?
very flattering for Buffalo. I thought that Philadelphia walked all over them, to tell you the truth. And I thought Buffalo, again, reverted back to their old take really dopey penalties and, you know, hold on for dear life.
Philadelphia's always had a good team, right? I mean, for the most part.
Yeah, there were a lot of questions because of the U.S. Lacrosse team, and they couldn't do both. And they don't have Rabel this year and a few other people. And, of course, trading Westervelt and a few other things went on. So there was a lot of question marks of how they would come out, and they came out flying. So there was some nice surprises there.
Now, it all really depends on who you ask, though. If you ask a Buffalo fan about how you think they're doing, or if you ask a Philly fan how good they actually think the team is, you'll get a completely different answer.
Oh, yeah,
okay,
sure.
What makes Philadelphia such a good team? Give me an idea. Give the fans out there, people who are interested in learning about lacrosse, what makes Philadelphia go, and then what makes Buffalo go? Let's start with Philadelphia. Both you guys take a turn, and our fourth caller, we'll find out who that person is later, I guess.
Well, I mean, when you look at the players that that Philadelphia has signed, they've got guys like Kyle Buchanan, Jordan Hall, Tracy Kolesky, Evan Kirk, Brody Merrill. A lot of these guys were big field studs. They're doing well in the box. They did well to transition. Kyle Buchanan's a good Canadian boy. Grew up in Mississauga. He's bringing a lot of grit and grind to the game. Actually, he just got married, I think, this past summer, which is cool. But they bring a lot of grit and grind. It doesn't always necessarily translate into scoring. Obviously, it did on the 28th versus Buffalo with that 17-13 win. Not really known for taking a lot of penalties, but amongst their fan base, kind of known for taking naps in the middle of games.
Yes, definitely. It's interesting
you
that
you're
talking about Kyle Buchanan being Canadian, because for the last couple of years, Philadelphia has gone strictly American only and have tried to make the transition of field players to box players, and it hasn't really worked out well for them. But this little group of players seems to have the idea.
Well, I definitely think so. Then you look at Buffalo. What can you really say?
Now, you got to be careful, because we've had Buffalo Bandits fans on the show last year. So
no, don't get me wrong. They have a lot of good talent. The only problem that they seem to have is, well, you know, with older cars, when it's really, really cold out, you get vapor lock.
Mm-hmm.
Same sort of thing happens to these guys sometimes when they hit the floor, only we're talking the cranial variety.
Well, it's funny, because it's the old the musicians thing. You know, you take a look at a symphony orchestra, and everyone is a virtuoso soloist in their own bit. It's only when they get together do they have trouble.
Exactly.
And,
wow.
At times, the defense on Buffalo, well, they seem to have trouble getting it together with everybody else. The penalties. And
there
more penalties.
You go.
Well, that's the thing on the National Lacrosse League forums and the National Lacrosse League message boards at Wing Zone, now at ilindoor.com. One of the fans used to post a list of what they need to do. And number three on every single list that he ever posted...
No dumb penalties, yeah.
Dumb penalties. Fair enough, every single game. Oh, come on, what are they doing?
Dumb penalties.
Well, yeah, they're notorious for the five-minute major.
Yeah.
There's usually at least one a game, if not more. They're notorious for it.
So is it the roughness that they're trying to establish and that they feel they need to do?
No, I think it's just general frustration. I mean, when you look at the first game against Philadelphia, Billy Dee took 7 minutes in penalties. Rory Smith took 6 minutes in penalties. I mean, they only had, and this is low for Buffalo, 19 minutes worth of penalties in the game. But of those 19 minutes in penalties, Philly went 3-for-6.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, when you're converting at that rate. Now, granted, the other way around, Philadelphia took 21 minutes in penalties, and Buffalo went 4-for-8 on that. But, you know, I mean, the whole deal is they take penalties at inopportune times, I think is the best way to put it.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and it's really stupid stuff like slashing or pretty much slashing.
Or things behind the play or things that have nothing to do with what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's like somebody gets under their skin or chirps them and they just, and away they go.
Yep.
Doesn't sound like a very effective way to play to me.
No. What was it Tiger Williams said? They were practicing defensive zone coverage, and they said, I know. Why don't you guys start 5-on-4, and then I'll coach. I'll take a dumb one.
There you go. Okay, let's move on. And another game was played on the 28th, this one in Rochester. The Minnesota Swarm visited the Rochester Nighthawks. And I'm looking at the score and saying to myself, that's got to be one of the lower scores in lacrosse. Rochester won 8-6.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
No, that was
a really
tight game. I was going to say, sorry, Gary.
Yeah, no, you're right. A tight game, but it was really a fast-moving game. Things were end-to-end continuously, and there was a lot of decent saves and a whole lot of really good teamwork on both sides.
Yeah, what I'm really actually liking
is, it was just a pleasure to watch.
What I'm really liking is how Matt Vince played in that game. He faced 51 shots and only let in 6. So he's the
elite in the league, though.
Yeah, no, he is. I mean, I remember watching him play when he was coming up in St. Catharines in junior A and thinking to myself, this kid's going places. And he hasn't disappointed so far in his NLL career. And I'm really glad to see that.
Now, was it a game that could have gone either way, or was this another one of those games where the team that was close was only close by score?
Well, Rochester was...
Oh, no, it could have gone either way.
Yeah, it really could have. Okay. They were back and forth. After 3, it was 5-4. And it wasn't until the quarter that Rochester opened up, put the hammer down, and blew them away.
It reminded me a lot of the semifinals last year, actually, because wasn't it the last couple of minutes where Rochester got a couple of goals to get into the finals?
Yeah. Yeah, no, Rochester went on a 3-goal run from 7:25 to 12:29 in the fourth just to salt the game away. So, you know, this is Rochester is one of those teams where if they want to put the foot down, if they want to put the hammer down, you're in trouble.
Yeah, they have an extra gear that most teams don't have.
And they're
solid on defense, too, so they can play it either way. Tight games, wide-open games, they can play it both ways, and they have the goaltending. So, you know, to have them three-peat really isn't far-fetched to think.
No, not in the slightest. It's a definite possibility. It's something to watch out for, and I think it's going to be really fun to watch.
And I would give
Kurt Sires a whole lot of credit for the way he's put that team together.
Yes,
because he took
definitely.
A lot of flack for all the trades, trading away John Grant Jr. and Sean Williams and everybody else just to try and put this together. He really took a lot of flack, and he had his own plan. And here we are, a couple of years later, 2 championships there, and really, really gunning hard and strong.
And they have to play well. Like they have to play well defensively against Minnesota. Because the last game that I saw, and that was, of course, the one where the Rock lost in the first game of the playoffs, they really did need to hold Minnesota scoring down to win that game because, quite frankly, the goaltending that Minnesota has is outstanding.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. Last game during the playoffs, their goalie, Tyler Carlson, really stood on his head. He was phenomenal.
Well, to show you how good Carlson is, if you can trade away Evan Kirk, you got yourself a really good goalie.
Yeah, and he wasn't the guy at the beginning of the year. And the coach just in the middle of the year decided you're going to go on goal. So, you know, it's a great goaltending. Anything else to add about those two teams that the fans might say about the two teams in your mind that we haven't mentioned, Rochester and Minnesota, before we move on?
There's a couple actually big guns that you're going to want to keep an eye on Rochester. One of them is Dan Dawson. And the other guy is Cody Jamison. These two guys can, as a duo, take over the game and turn it around for you guys in a matter of minutes. They are that awesome. Those are definitely two guys to keep an eye on. For Minnesota, you're going to want to keep an eye on Mike Hobbins, and you're going to want to keep an eye on. Now, this is only my personal opinion here, so you know.
That's okay.
You're going to want to keep an eye on Suter as well.
How about you, Gary?
Mm-hmm. As long as he's healthy.
As long as that's the one proviso.
See, that's another testament to how good Minnesota was last year, is he was out for most of the year with a big-time injury, and this team stood up and stepped up and did everything they needed to do. I'm curious how that semifinal game would have gone if he was in the lineup.
Yeah, that would have been more interesting, to say the least.
Yeah.
And not necessarily in a good way.
Yeah, well, yeah, definitely.
Now, there was one other game that was played on the 28th, and that was a late start from the Pepsi Center in Denver.
That's right. Edmund, that's my job. I get to talk about the games. I get to mention the games, and then you talk about them. Boy, oh boy. What are you, guest host in training here? Holy mackerel.
I'm shutting up.
Okay. Wait for me to tell you. Okay, all kidding aside. Yes, at the Pepsi Center, another game was played, and that was between the Edmonton Rush and the Colorado Mammoth. And how do you guys feel? And, Gary, you can go first about that game and for both teams from their perspective. 13-10 is an average kind of, you know, more of a lower score about average, I guess, in lacrosse.
I actually expected a little more out of Edmonton, and I thought they came out kind of flat. Mind you, Colorado looked pretty good this year, and they seem to be gelling very, very well. Say Westervelt, he's always amazes me at what he can do. Him and John Grant are really, you know, top line forwards. But I say Edmonton just kind of left me wanting a little more. That I thought that they were onto something the last couple of years, and they just didn't seem to have it. Aaron, you think?
David, I think Edmonton's one of those teams that's been on the cusp of greatness for a few years now, despite their horrible, horrible start when they initially came into the league. They have really turned it around. They're a young team. They're a fast team. Quite frankly, every time they go to play the Rock, I get really scared just because these guys can really light it up if they want to. They've got solid goaltending. They've got a really good back line. And Mark Matthews has just been awesome.
Yeah, since he stepped into the league, it's been incredible watching him. Absolutely incredible. And Aaron Bold is he's been lights out for the last little while. So
he has. He's
I'm
been
really expecting them to start moving upward.
Now, one of the things I wanted to mention about this game, is the attendance. 15,596 for an opening game. That to me is just awesome. I mean, that's old Toronto Rock numbers, you know, back when they first moved to the ACC in 2001, 2002. I would love to see Toronto get back there again, but I'm so glad that Denver's getting that kind of attendance. Just because it means so much to the league, because you know that much exposure is pure publicity gold.
It's fantastic. But again, I think they have the same thing as some of the other cities, where it has to do with the season ticket base of the hockey team. And that really helps out huge.
There's that connection?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe the Mammoth and the Avalanche are part and parcel.
Yes.
I'm not 100% sure. And
no,
if anybody
they are.
Can correct
they are.
Me.
No, they are. When I was watching the game, clearly there's a connection there. Not any more dissimilar than the Calgary Stampeders and the Calgary Flames. There's mm-hmm. there's a financial interest that's mutual.
Right. Plus they have their own TV station that does
yes.
the games too, so they get a fair amount of exposure out in that area.
Totally agreed. And a good thing.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, a relationship like that with the main tenant in the arena is an absolute boon.
Okay, so that takes care of the 28th. And I want to remind everybody you're listening to Candid Frank Live, the National Lacrosse League show with Aaron William Freeland and Gary Grube. And Christopher Jones, our usual CFL pundit, is sitting there with his ears on. So he doesn't really want to participate, other than the fact that, I don't know if you'll kill me for saying this, he did play goal as a lacrosse player. And, and so, you know, he's listening with a little bit of interest, to say the least. So, and of course, my name's Frank. And the show's on. We put the show on once a week. This is our second edition of 2014, even though the first edition was on before 2014. We'll move on to January 3rd, where we had the Calgary Roughnecks come in here to Toronto and lost 16-11 at the Air Canada Centre. How about that game? Want to talk about that one?
Go ahead, Gary. I'll let you start.
Here we go.
I thought that the Rock came out just flying. I thought that they really seemed to want to show something, that they were energetic. They were up for the task. They were in your face. They were brash. They were covering each other. They didn't take a whole lot of dumb penalties, which is nice. And altogether, I think they gelled. And I think some of the switches, I really like to see Stéphane LeBlanc back in the role of scoring, because we haven't seen it in a couple of years. He's been kind of the odd man out and all that. And with him in there, with his size and his shooting, I think that's going to be a terrific, terrific addition to this team.
Yeah, you know, and he was the guy that they depended on in that playoff game, and I'm not blaming him or anything, but he came up pretty flat in that playoff game.
Well, there's only so much that the Garrett Billings is going to be able to do, because he's going to be carrying, you know, double and triple coverage. So now that we have LeBlanc coming back and shooting, and now that he's healthy, I guess, everything is going to be in good shape. So
I wanted to point out a couple things. Folks, remember to have your ticket stubs if you're listening and you're going to games, because of the hero deal, the certified hero of the game. If one of those three Toronto Rock players selected scores a point, you get a free milkshake with your burger the next day.
There you go.
Which is awesome. The other thing I wanted to take a look at was how big some of the guys came up last night. It was absolutely unbelievable. Colin Doyle went 2-2, which is nice, 2 goals, 2 assists. Garrett Billings had, I think, a highlight
10
game.
10 points, wasn't it?
10 points, 1 goal, 9 assists. Yeah. Stéphane LeBlanc had 7, 5 goals, and 2 assists. Josh Sanderson wasn't bad with 2 goals and 3 assists. I mean, these are the guys that you need to come up big every single game. And to open like that is going to fill them with confidence and is going to just make things that much better for them. Calgary, on the flip side, Sean Evans came up with 7 points, 1 goal, 7 assists. Jeff Shatler, 4 goals and 2 assists. That guy has always been a heartbreaker here in Toronto. But when you look at what happened last night, the Roughnecks managed to get 2 goals in 28 seconds, 1 at 4:47 and 1 at 5:15 in the fourth quarter. Just to, you know, make it 13-10 at that point. I think it served as a bit of a wake-up call, because Nick Rose looked a little soft on those.
Yeah, we were actually sitting where we were sitting. We were starting to say, you know, the next goal becomes very crucial, because if by some reason it became 13-11, we had a whole new game on our hands.
Yeah.
And luckily it became 14-10 and things became back to the norm. But it was a nervous couple of minutes around there.
Well, the good thing is Casey managed to stop the bleeding by getting that 14th goal for us. So.
Mm-hmm.
That was also Garrett Billings' 10th point of the game.
But it's interesting, because in the last couple of years, Casey Burns has been pretty much a forefront when it comes to scoring, and he's kind of a side note right now. So there's a lot of things going on in the offense, let alone Rob Hellier as well, with his buzzer beater, which was astounding. It was a terrific goal.
That was awesome. I didn't think they were going to count it at first, but, you know, hey, we'll take it, right?
Yeah, Gardonia didn't seem to have any doubt about it. He was already right at center.
Yeah, there were a couple of goals that were questioned.
There were, but thankfully it worked out in our favor. Thumbs up?
Yeah.
Good.
Definitely
not about that. Anyway, every time a call goes your way, you know, it's never a bad thing. But I think you were right, Gary. The fact that we jumped out to a 7-3 lead at the end of the first, 9-4 by the end of the half, was a good thing. The Rock really had the hammer down, you know, getting
it relaxed them, and it put Calgary in a really tough spot, and they had to change around their game plan.
Yeah, well, I mean, they got their first 3 goals in just over 2 minutes. Calgary responded with 2, and then Toronto got 2 within 25 seconds to put themselves back up again, 4-2. So, you know, or 5-2, sorry. So that definitely makes it easier. I mean, when everybody's firing on all cylinders, it just makes everything so much faster.
And then we also had the close one with Jesse Gamble's almost his second one of the game. but that one did get called back. But he's just a little bolt of lightning, isn't he?
Oh, he's awesome. He reminds me of a younger Sandy Chapman.
Mm-hmm.
He really does. He's got the foot speed. He's got the heart. He's got the grind, and he's good to go. You know, that kid will he'll go with anybody.
Yeah, as proven in the playoffs last year, there's nothing's going to stop him.
No,
he's just a little iron.
No, one thing
go
ahead.
The Rock outscored them. You know, in the first three quarters, and like you guys said, in the fourth quarter, it looked kind of hazardous, but they didn't have less than a 4-goal lead at any time. So, you know, they had it pretty much in hand, and they were very consistent out there. And defensively, I found them very impressive because it seemed to me that I don't know if they keep the stat, but it seemed to me that they spent a lot more time in the Calgary zone, and Calgary couldn't really work anything down low. Yeah, I don't know why that is. Did the Rock make changes, or is Calgary that kind of team that has a little difficulty working down low?
I'll be honest with you. I think sometimes the Calgary defense is just about a half a step behind. When it comes to mucking and grinding in the corners, they didn't seem like they quite had it that game. The defense looked a little looser, but we'll see. We'll see if the coaches make any changes just to see if they can tighten that up.
I thought Big Dog did a great job with the Rock defense, and you know, he was constantly, we're sitting right behind him, so he's constantly, you know, talking and changing and moving things around. So both him and Manning, both I thought had a really good debut behind the bench.
Yeah, you really couldn't ask for better. You know, I mean, it's always nice to get a win like that. So I'm glad that their debut went well. Now the next question is, can we get carryover into the second game?
There you go. And on that note, I need you to be quiet for 15 seconds.
Versus Calgary, Friday, January 3rd. For the best ticket in town, visit TorontoRock.com.
All right, that also works for every other game during the season. They're just mentioning the Calgary game. So on Saturday this weekend, there was one more game. And I'll remind you folks out there, you're listening to Blog Talk Radio. This is Candid Frank Live, the National Lacrosse League show with Gary Grube and Aaron William Freeland. So the Vancouver Stealth played in Colorado, and they lost 13-12. That was a really good game. It really was the kind of game that really didn't have, the pace was pretty good, I found. What did you guys think?
It was definitely fast-moving. It was an opportunity to see a slightly retooled Vancouver team. They essentially went with the same, obviously, because it was the Washington Stealth. There weren't a lot of changes made in the offseason, so glad that worked. Noticed that Richards got the start. Happy for him. He played well. I'm sure there's a couple that he'd like back, as there always is. Dylan Ward and Ty Belanger teamed up to actually play. They split the game, basically. I think it was after... Yeah, it was actually just at the... it was about partway through the third quarter that Ward came out, and I think Belanger went in. Or am I reading now? I got that backwards. Never mind.
That was the other way around. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll get it one of these days. I swear.
Gary.
Now, when Vancouver went on their 4-goal run to start the second quarter, I think that's when they decided to staunch the bleeding with a goalie swap. So that worked out okay. But. You know, overall, that highlight reel goal by Westervelt, oh, just beautiful.
That was something to behold, yeah, absolutely. And both teams played great, and it was a wonderful game to watch. And
I enjoyed it.
It was That was a TSN game too, which is one of the things I wanted to get on. I don't know if you guys got on. It's not that the Rock don't have as many games for sure, but they're starting to expand to other teams as well, which is going to start promoting it a little bit more, I think. Now, I'd love to see more Rock games on TSN and TSN 2, but it's nice to see some other teams as well, because I think Sportsnet used to carry the Edmonton-Calgary game, and that was it, the one game of the year that they would carry. So if they can get a couple more games out there as well, that might draw a little bit more attention as well.
Well, it's too bad that broadcast television, doesn't have all the games on. But I keep reminding folks, and I want to keep reminding you, all you need to do, the easiest way, they're on YouTube. But for me, and I think for you, if you're listening, the easiest way to do it is go to NLL.com, www.NLL.com, and National League Lacrosse. And you look at the scores and the schedule, and the games are there, and you can watch them. There's a broadcast button, and you can watch any of those games. So it makes it really simple. And
you can do it on your mobile devices, too. You don't have to be by a desktop.
Exactly. And it's very easy to access. And I think it's important that for us to continually mention the fact that you can watch these games. You don't have to hope and pray that it's on TSN. And yes, there are five games. And yes, I agree that they're broadening the spectrum of what team is playing in the NLL. It always seemed to be the Rock games were on TV, but that I think was more a function of the fact that they were such a good team. They were a championship team. So, you know, the games you knew were going to be good because the teams that came into town or they went to play were prepared and knew what they were up against. So, you know, with the Rock not being the championship team, it gives the league an opportunity to show off some of the other teams, which we've discussed early here in the program.
Now, I'm curious, since we did have the CBS deal before, which is now finished, if they're planning on doing anything with one of the other networks to do anything with the game of the week. They dipped their toe in there. You know, some things were good, some things were so-so. But I'm curious if they're going to do anything at all with some of the other U.S. networks.
Yeah, that I'm not 100% sure of. I haven't seen a lot of noise about that sort of thing. So
these games that are broadcast on do you guys know how they work and the broadcasting? Is there, like, for example, the Rock game that I watched? You know, I understand that there's an organization that does it, but is it pretty much an in-house broadcast?
Yeah, what you're looking at is, for the most part, is the scoreboard feed.
Okay.
So, you know, you'll get most of the game, but you'll get the advertisements and the clapping hands and all that fun stuff, too. But, you know, it doesn't really take away from it. A lot of the times I find that the in-house coverage is a lot better than the television coverage.
And you get the dance, what do they call it? The
dance cruise, the dance pack.
Yeah, the dance pack.
Well, do you remember last year when we were in Rochester and they actually put the TSN feed on their scoreboard?
Yeah.
It was actually a reversal.
I remember that.
That's interesting.
Which was kind of humorous because, you know, all of a sudden there's more of us 50 people in the stands than the rest of the people in the crowd.
It is a little funny. So as far as the first week is concerned, well, we'll say the first week of our show. It isn't really week one. It's week one in a bit. What surprise, did you see this week that you'd want to share with folks that made this past week special or surprising?
The insta-carping by the Buffalo fans. I'm sorry, that always just totally makes my day. I was watching the Buffalo fans on Twitter and on Facebook, and just as soon as the game started to slip away, it's like, oh, it's going to be a long season.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, the IL boards were full of that, too.
All right.
Fire the trainer, save the season.
Another wonderful segue. Another fun, wonderful segue. First, Gary came up with one. Now you have, Aaron. So our first game this week that'll be taking place, well, Friday will be the first game night, and there will be two games being played. One of them will be in Buffalo with Toronto the Rock visiting the Bandits. And what do you see now that we've talked about Buffalo? I mean, it's a perfect time for Toronto to come in after a bad game. There's nothing that turns the Buffalo fans on better than having Toronto come in. As Aaron, as you've educated me, there's a deep connection between the Buffalo fans and an affinity that each fan base has for each other.
Yeah, it's honest to goodness, it's a huge extended family. That is basically what it boils down to. They love having us come down there. We love them coming up here. There's always a good certain amount of good-natured joshing that goes on. Not too much beer is thrown. And it's generally a hoot of a time. I do remember getting a police escort out of Buffalo once, but, you know, it's well-deserved.
I got a question from Christopher, and I'm going to only assume what his question was, and he can correct me. He's in the room. He's not, you know, he's hooked directly, just not commenting. He asked why the CFL can't do that. In other words, I think he was talking about the broadcasting and how, you know, on the webpage you can see every game, every score, and then you can watch the game. You can pick to watch the game, if you will. Here in Canada, because I think it might have something to do with the fact that TSN has a TV contract, and we're and yes, and he's said yes four times, so I guess I'm barking up the right tree here. I'm gonna offer this reason, and I think it's important because these two leagues have a lot in common. It's basically because of the TSN contract, and they have a in fact. Chris, let me tell you about this. Here's one, Gary, you might be aware of or not. I don't know. They used to show my horn all the time on the CFL broadcast, TSN. They have decided that it isn't such a good idea, and I'm just trying to make the point here. They don't like it because I advertise this show called Candid Frank Live, which, by the way, doesn't have any advertisers. Not because I don't want them, just because I don't care. This is a fan broadcast, and the NLL is the same thing. I'm here to basically celebrate the game with some fans and hopefully some other fans that are listening. And TSN's very possessive. They have a contract with the CFL, and they don't want to share that kind of stuff, Christopher. That's why I think they don't do it. They want people to watch and make sure they see the commercials. They want all the eyes for commercial time, and they want the numbers to show up on television, because I don't think there's that much respect. I don't think there's that much respect for the internet yet, as far as advertising is concerned. Even though it is,
well, they do the
headway.
Same thing actually in the NLL, because when TSN has the game, it's blocked out in our area. We can't get it on
there you
YouTube.
Go. There you
so
go.
So they do exactly the same thing, because they want all the eyes for the ads.
There you go. And that's fantastic. That's fine. You know, that's fine. But at the end of the day, it is nice if you're a fan of a league that doesn't have, you know, the kind of consistent broadcasting that makes being a fan of that league, you know, the best. And it's great that the NLL has this, and I applaud what they're doing because they're giving their fans a chance. And here's the part that I enjoy and what I think is important. Is they're showing some respect also for the people who go to the game, because then they can go home and watch it at their convenience again. Because I find the people who are fans of the CFL and fans of the NLL truly do love their teams a lot more than other leagues, and I think it's probably because the seasons are so short. You know, for me, you know, the Rock season begins and then it's gone. You know, it really doesn't seem to last that long. And that's not a negative comment. That's just an observation. How do you guys feel about that?
Well,
I agree.
Go ahead, Gary. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's just a flicker. You know, once we've settled in and we get more than most because we travel around and go to other cities to see games. But, yeah, by the time you're settled in there, you're already talking about playoffs. So to
exactly.
have this eventually get to a bigger thing of 40 games or something would be awesome.
All right. Well, for now, we've advanced. They've added an extra home game. So now instead of eight, there's nine. So there is some progress. It may not be as speedy as people like Gary might like, but it is what it is, and that's what we've got right now in the National Lacrosse League. So the Rock and the Bandits, you guys, not because you're Rock fans, but as observers of the game, you would think that the Rock would be the favorite in that game, and what will the Rock have to do to maintain that favoritism, if you will, A, and B, what will Buffalo have to do to win? Aaron, you first.
No dumb penalties.
Sorry. The words right out of my mouth.
It's just a little too obvious. No, I know Buffalo's going to be fired up for this game. They're always fired up when Toronto comes to town. One of the things that we have to be aware of is the fact that they are definitely going to antagonize and to try to abuse the Rock physically. It's one thing that Buffalo teams have been very good at in the past. Their ability to throw you off your game is legendary, but the issue that they have a lot of the times, again, is that whole no dumb penalties thing. That usually rears up to bite them in the ass. If the Rock can come out of this with a good solid win and no injuries, then we're going to be well set up for the rest of the year. The other important thing to remember is when it comes playoff time, these games do count. You know what I mean? Like there's no real pussyfooting around it because the season is so short. A screw up here or a gimme game that you blow there. Not that this is a gimme game, Buffalo fans. Don't misunderstand me. don't kill me. This is not a gimme game by any stretch of the imagination, but any game that you don't win now is going to come back to hurt you later, especially when it comes to tiebreakers and whatnot coming into the playoffs. And these, because the league is so tight and so close, it's a very real risk.
So the intention here is, of course, what you're saying to Rock is that they can be liberal and conservative, but no NDP.
Bingo.
I think a lot of it has to do with the goaltending. It depends which Anthony Cosmos shows up, because he's either lights out or he's like he's never seen the position before. And it's whether Nick Rose is concentrating for the entire game, because it seems at times he lapses and a few of these things come in that shouldn't be going in, and how we build momentum. I think a lot has to do with keeping shooters on the outside, not letting him in, because as soon as they get him moving, as Minnesota again proved last year, was when you get him moving side to side, your chances of scoring are probably a whole lot better, whereas he's a great angle goalie.
Yeah, that's the one thing I've noticed about Nick. He's dead solid positionally. It's very hard to beat him on the angles. But I think Jarrett mentioned this at the post-game party as well. He plays well enough, but there are times when he starts to play like a big guy and feel like a big guy. In other words,
it seems to me like he loses concentration for a few minutes of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And in this the Calgary game, a couple went in during that little span. Because even when he came back to the bench talking with Zach, he had a dazed look of what just happened.
Yeah, and the other thing is that it may be that he may be feeling a little more tired. The stamina may not necessarily be there. So those lapses may be due to the fact that he's wearing down during games. I don't know. I can't speak to his level of personal fitness. You know, I've never seen him work out. I've seen him post game. He's a big dude, but
he's very big. A gentle bear is what he is, actually. Zach Boychuk. Now, is it my imagination, or he's dropped quite a bit of weight, hasn't he?
I do think he has lost quite a few pounds. Yeah, he's looking like
a lot slimmer. Yeah, he looks a lot slimmer. And if I caught the pregame right, he's a vegetarian now.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he was going to give it a go.
Vegetarian or vegan? Vegetarian or vegan?
No, just vegetarian.
Oh, okay.
One step at a time.
The one thing that Zach does have to work on, though, I don't know if you caught all of the pregame, Gary, but one thing that Zach needs to work on is his footwork.
Yes, I agree. I agree. Especially just getting out onto the floor. If we can get past that one, we're pretty good.
That was absolutely priceless. I felt so bad for him, though.
Well, thank God it wasn't ice. Thank God it was turf where he just had to get up.
Oh.
He wasn't going to slide out to the blue line.
That was a beautiful header, you got to admit.
It was wonderful. And, I'm just curious, as the cheerleaders were standing there, what they were thinking as he took a dive.
Timber! No, the Rock actually have a really good young duo back there with Zach and Nick manning the pipes. It's a solid duo, I think. They just need to stay sharp and on top of it, and we'll be good to go. No lapses, making sure that, you know, they try to keep themselves safe and sound and in one piece. Healthy goalies, I think, are really the key for a lot of teams in the league. If your goalie is hurting or if he's not 100%, it's going to cause issues for you down the line. But you are right, Garrett. Though, Gary,
we never had these problems with Whipper back there. We never had to think about any of this.
The
Rock have been in existence.
I mean, his retirement was huge for the Rock, and retooling around the fact that he's no longer there. You know, this it does make things a little bit more difficult for them.
Well, there's no game that can be won with bad goaltending. At the very least, you have to have good goaltending.
This is true.
Bad goaltending will kill you. So, yeah, and the better the goaltending, the better there is the opportunity for you to win. Let's move on to the next game, guys. Two teams who haven't won yet. Both have lost their first games of the season. This game will be at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome, the Calgary Roughnecks' home. They'll be visited by the Colorado Mammoth. And I wanted to mention something. In the middle of your discussions with cheerleaders and stuff, the Colorado Mammoth, where they play at the Pepsi Center, they have a hot tub with, I saw, three bikini-clad girls, which I thought was amusing.
Yep.
And that's been there since they became a team.
Yep.
Interesting supporter section. It's a good thing we don't do that, Gary, with the Argos, because that would be really pathetic, because I don't think I'd wear a bikini very well.
You just have to make sure you whack, Frank, that's all.
There you go. So Christopher Jones has another comment. He wants to agree, and he says goaltenders are very important. And that's because he played goal, you see. That's why he said that, I think.
Well, it's always nice to have other goalies listening in, even if they're not saying nothing.
There you go.
We usually are the strong, silent type. I'm the exception to the rule.
He's going as far as saying they're a three-letter word, dog in reverse. Now, Calgary lost, Colorado lost. Which team, Calgary, has the advantage, I think, because they're at home? You guys, the experts, you take it from there. Let's start with Gary this time.
I'm liking Calgary's chances in this because I think they were just a little bit off against Toronto, and I think if they get a fresh start right from the beginning, I think the goaltending goes their way. I think Poulin's solid continually. And with their forwards, they can match up very, very easily with Colorado. Aaron?
Well, I'm looking at I've always liked the Mammoth for some reason. I think it's the logo. I'm sappy and sentimental for
weren't they originally Edmonton? Weren't they originally in Edmonton or something?
No. As far as I'm aware, they've always been there.
Okay.
What I'm really loving about the I forgot about that. They had Vader on the floor for the first home game. Do you remember that? Did you see
yes.
that?
Did you that's the part that was making me laugh. Their home game was funny against Vancouver because it was Star Wars night.
Ty Belange has been a really, really good guy.
The host and the co-host, you know, the play-by-play guy and the color guy, they were speaking into lightsabers, you know, those ones that the telescopic ones with lights.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was funny. So Colorado, probably after this week, will be 0-2. Calgary might win their first game. But it's going to be interesting because I happen to think that these two teams match up very well as well.
No, they do. They most definitely do. They're very well placed and very well matched teams. I'll definitely give you that. I'm just wondering if we may not see a tilt in this game at some point, just because there are guys on the team that just don't like each other.
Yeah.
So we'll just have to see how that goes. I'm not going to prognosticate as to any possible matchups right now because, quite honestly, anything can happen. One interesting thing to note, Colorado, when they initially started in the league, tried to go with a high percentage of American players. Now there's two American players on the team. There's Drew Westervelt from Bel Air, and there's John Orson from Laurel Hollow in New York. Those are the only two Americans on the team.
There you go.
So I guess maybe Krenke and them saw the light and realized that, you know what, Canadians are probably going to be better for box at this point in time, and so you can have a chance to grow the game a little bit more in the States. But
we still have the Philadelphia experiment going on, so it's still alive and well. It just moved elsewhere.
Yeah, and another great segue, Gary, because the next game we're going to talk about is one that will be taking place in Blue Cross Arena in Rochester, New York. The home of the Rochester Nighthawks will be visited by the Philadelphia Wings.
I think this is going to be a good test for Philadelphia. Like I say, they played very well against Buffalo, but now when they're going to get a championship-caliber team to face, let's see really where they stand and how they stand. In all aspects, the goaltending, again, their forwards, they look really good against Buffalo. We're going to see how they go against Matt Vince and Dawson and a few of the other guys out there. And I think it'll be a really big test for Philadelphia.
And this weekend is a tough weekend. There are six games being played, and math says there's only nine teams. You know, you need 12 teams to play, so that means there's three teams that are playing multiple games this weekend.
Well, Philadelphia plays the next night or next afternoon back in Philly, so that's going to be a tough one as well.
Isn't it? Like that? Like, what is that like for these teams? Because, you know, it is a tough game to play, not to suggest that, you know, no other sport is, but there is a lot of running, and we always talk about the game of European football or South American football, otherwise known as soccer here in North America. The running game is a very big fitness test, and it's got to be tough to play two games in 3 days.
Well, Colorado's doing the same thing. They play Calgary on the Friday, and then they play Edmonton on the Saturday. So that's definitely going to be a huge test for them. I mean, I'd be really interested to see how they face up against the Edmonton Rush, because those guys are scary fast.
Yep. Let's stick with the Philadelphia Wings for the defending champs, the Rochester Nighthawks. We'll move to them next. So, you know, Rochester's the team to beat this year. And in every champion, no matter who comes into town, the team usually that comes to visit or they go to visit usually plays over their head. They always play very well. They're always ready for the champ. So this is going to be a good game. Wherever the champ goes, it's always going to be they're the team that everybody wants to knock off that perch.
It's very difficult to play in Rochester as a visiting team because it's lower ceilings, very, very loud, very, very interactive, and the team is very, very good to go with it. So as a visiting team, you have a lot of obstacles, which is why it took Toronto so long to actually get a regular season win there. Once we figured it out, we were pretty good at it. But it's really a unique place to play.
It's honestly, I think it's one of my favorite arenas to go to, just because it's almost always packed. You're guaranteed you're going to know the people around you, and there's a lot of respect for visiting fans there. That arena is, you're right, Gary, is one of the noisiest and one of the hottest boxes in the NLL, and it's always such a blast. So.
And it starts a couple hours before at the Stock and finishes a couple of hours after at the Stock.
The Stock, yeah, which is literally across.
It's literally across the street, is right, yeah.
It's funny, guys, you know, because my history with lacrosse and doing the Toronto Beaches, because we played a lot of the local arenas, they had the low ceilings as well. And we used to do the games in the summer. It was a little more interesting. It become a really hot box, right? Is it hot in the Rochester arena as well?
Oh, most definitely. I'm usually sweating underneath my jersey. You know, even in the cold of winter, after you strip down for the game, if you're not wearing a short sleeve shirt in there, you're gonna be melting. You know how John Granger gets at Argos games?
Yep, yep.
It's like that.
We've got another great segue for you, Aaron. Christopher Jones wanted to add another comment, and I'll read his statement. In other words, quote him. We used to play three or four games in a weekend tournament. Stop being a weenie.
Let me tell you about Fan Cup.
Yeah, he doesn't know about Fan Cup yet. I don't know if, you know, doing these shows makes it so difficult for me to take part in some of that stuff that we want to take part in. Aaron, it makes it so tough. I'm going to have to figure something out, because that's one thing this year I'd like to check out, maybe not as a participant, but at least as a viewer, if you will.
Well, it's in Chicago, so you got to make sure you book the time off.
Oh, there you go. That's no problem.
July 26th this year.
Okay, perfect. So our third game on Saturday will be the Minnesota Swarm visiting the Vancouver Stealth. It'll be in the Langley Event Center, Langley, B.C., for you, Christopher. Christopher's out in B.C. And this is going to be another interesting game. I like the way these two guys match up as well. Defensively, it's going to be a titanic struggle, I think.
Well, they're both very, very quick teams. And I know I seem to be saying this a lot, but maybe it's just because I'm used to teams whose speed you can measure with a calendar. The Rock have been longer in the tooth. They've been trying to get younger, but you know, the Minnesota Swarm played at a very, very fast pace. The Stealth last year played at a very quick pace as well. So this is going to be another one of those. I think it's going to be fire wagon lacrosse. You're going to see a lot of end-to-end. You're going to see some nice outlet passes. Hopefully, it'll be a barn burner of a game. My one fear is that Langley, because it's so far outside of Vancouver, I don't know how many people are actually going to be willing to make the trip across the bridge.
Well, let me tell you something. We've got one guy that might just go. Christopher now is going, there's a team in Langley? Because he didn't even know that Vancouver had a lacrosse team at first when we were first talking.
Well,
and now that he knows it's in Langley, it's close. I guess it's close enough to him. It's closer than Vancouver itself, maybe.
Well, he's drawing all the Surrey people out there and all the people from Delta and everybody from the neighboring areas over there, because it'd certainly be something that they all would enjoy. And this is the kind of game that I think that should be broadcast, because they have such high-paced teams and pretty even teams at that, that this would be something you'd like to showcase, to show what this game can offer.
I'm not sure. Maybe I should pull up the TSN schedule. All I can tell you at this point, and maybe I will pull up the schedule, they don't put on here whether the games are on TV or not.
Actually, they do. If you go to the More button, and then lacrosse, and then click on broadcast schedule, right in the middle of the page. It'll show you the games that are on. That game next weekend is not.
Okay.
The next game that TSN is going to be showing is Friday, January 31st, Vancouver at Toronto on TSN2.
That's right.
So to me, that's an opportunity missed for the league.
Yeah,
but,
the difference,
you know, there'll be many other opportunities. The parity this year, the last few anyways, but this year especially, seems to be unmatched. It's going to be a very, very interesting season.
Especially from your perspective, because you know, as a Rock fan, you know, they're in the pack. They're in the equation, and there's a lot of other teams that are equally in the equation. Then you have Rochester, of course. So yeah, it's going to be very interesting in these games, and you got to admire this schedule. You know, I mentioned how the season starts and begins and ends so quickly. Well, when you've got nine games and they're playing two on one weekend, you know, we just said 25% of their season is played on one weekend.
Yeah,
it's true.
Exactly. You know. I'm kidding, but, you know, the math there didn't work right. But I'm just saying, it just feels that way, right? And so, you know, and lacrosse has always been, and thanks to, you know, the coverage, the experience that I have, it has always been a sport that's played not only at a high pace in a game, but always, the leagues have always been high paced, because traveling is something that they don't want to do any more than they have to. And also, you know, it has to fit into a time frame. Lacrosse isn't a seasonal sport in a recreational sense. It is here. It's a summer sport, right?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. I mean, it is considered more of a summer sport. The other issue that you run into a lot is the fact that these guys really truly are weekend warriors. That's really what it is. Everybody's got jobs to go back to, so they've got to make sure that they fit them in at just the right times. You know, it's a slog, but I think for me personally, I think it's totally worth it. Like, I love the idea of being a weekend warrior.
There you go. So
yeah,
do you have a preference? So Philadelphia should lose to the Rochester Nighthawks, talking about
should.
Our Saturday games.
Should.
They've been known to point, though.
Colorado and Edmonton's is a toss-up.
I'm thinking because Colorado is going to be coming off a game the night before against Calgary, Edmonton might get that win.
And the Stealth and the Swarm, I think Minnesota, as much as I love Vancouver, I think Minnesota, you know, they're going to be, you know, fired up to play well.
I just think they have so many weapons that it's going to be very tough for Vancouver to get by them.
Okay, let's move on to the final day of the week. That'll be the Sunday game with the Buffalo Bandits in Philadelphia to play the Wings in the Wells Fargo Center. That game is going to be interesting as well. But more or less, Philly's at home, which will make it tough.
It's also the rematch. And you know Buffalo's going to want a taste of that because they were not happy with losing that first game. So that's going to add an extra dimension of mean, I think, to it. If they're not hauling people out in body bags by the end of the game, something didn't go right.
Well,
but this
you
is
know,
Philly's home opener, isn't it? And from what I can remember, that's a very loud building when everybody's going.
Yeah.
They haven't had the crowds they had years ago, but they're still getting 9,000 or 10,000, so it should be a fairly raucous building.
That's the thing. There's so many barns in this league that are hard to play in, and it's really because of the fans that they're so hard to play in. The impetus and the encouragement that we can give the players, the fact that we're as close to them as we are is just awesome for me. Like it's one of the things I think that totally makes this league.
And that's a great thing.
I've said it before. The accessibility is incredible.
Yeah, I mean, how many other sports do you know? How many other professional sports do you know in where you can have a beer with the guys after the game?
Well, the league that Gary and I met
during
watching.
The game.
During the game. That's because of where you sit.
that's true, too.
Wait, Gary, are you behind the bench again? Yeah, right?
Yeah, I'm right behind the bench. Well, you saw the picture I got from you for you guys, right?
Oh, yeah. With me and Barks all the way up the booth?
Yeah, the team make noise booth, yeah.
All right,
yeah, no, we're right behind the bench again. But I actually had a brief chat with Chris White before the pregame, just seeing how he's doing.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What's
so
up with him?
It's nice to have a good chat with a couple of them. He's doing well. He's a little off yet still, but he'll be back. And his presence will be, again, another solidifying thing on defense.
Yeah, Chris White is one of those stabilizing influences. I mean, he was for years in Buffalo, so I'm actually really glad the Rock managed to land him. There's just a question now of getting him healthy and making sure he stays that way. So that should be interesting, yeah?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Okay, this week's going to be really easy to talk about the standings because there's only been one game to discuss for all the teams. Well, actually, there's been a couple of – the Mammoth have played twice, so, you know – they're 500. They've won one and lost one. But let's start with the East. You've got three teams, the Philadelphia Wings, the Rochester Nighthawks, and the Toronto Rock tied in first, the Buffalo Bandits and Minnesota Swarm. Reverse record 0-1 as opposed to 1-0 are tied for last. In the Western Division, the Edmonton Rush have won a game and not lost any. So they're in first. Colorado Mammoth playing 500. They lost one and won one. And then the Calgary Roughnecks and Vancouver Stealth have not won this week. They're one game. So anything in the – like the standings are kind of hard to talk about right now, but is it going to be a race in the East between Rochester and Toronto or Rochester and Philly, you guys think? What are we looking at in the standings in reality? Or in your opinion, I should rather say.
Well, I think the team that's probably going to turn out, at least at the end of next week, the team that will probably be in first is probably still going to be Rochester. Philadelphia is going to have a tough go. You know, I mean, they've got Buffalo and they've got their other game that weekend. That is going to make things interesting for them. the fact that Philadelphia is going to have a game in hand over Rochester is going to change that as well. I mean, it's really difficult to predict. The issue that you're running into here is with the double up weekend that Philly has and that Colorado has, it skews the standings a little bit. So if Philadelphia does as well as they hope that they will, they may very well be in first place, but only because of the fact that they doubled up this weekend. So you're really not going to see anything solidifying until about the fifth or sixth week, which is kind of crappy for us because it makes it harder to predict where everything is going to end up.
But in the same extent, you know, it gives an awful lot of opportunity where you can have a bad weekend and still you're not out of this thing.
No, that is true.
Even if Philadelphia loses both games, which I don't expect, but...
Well, they proved this wrong before.
That's true. I actually had picked Rochester, Toronto, and Minnesota to be the three teams out of the East. But I don't know. We'll see what Philadelphia has this weekend.
Well, hopefully for the long-suffering Philadelphia fans, it won't be, you know, it'll be a magical weekend for them, and they'll get the points that they need to be where they want to be for setting up for a postseason run. It's kind of funny to be talking about a postseason run only three or four games into the season, but that's just how tight it is. That's, you know.
And being
and
an 18-game season, you really only have a few opportunities to make that happen.
Let's discuss again. I know you discussed it earlier, but now while we're concentrating on the standings, how the playoffs work, since you've raised the issue of there being a tight battle and it'll be tough to make the playoffs, what does it take to make the playoffs, and how do you decide who you play?
Sorry, Frank.
Why is your laughter?
Getting into the playoffs, you're going to want to try to have the best possible record. You know what I mean? Like you run up the scores if you have to. Head to head record is going to determine for tiebreakers. After that, goal differential, then record against divisional opponents, and then record against other division opponents. So every single game that you play in division is super important. You have to try to win those individual series to make sure that you pretty much guaranteed yourself a spot.
Okay.
And who you're going to play is anybody's guess. It depends on what the other teams are doing, but you can only worry about yourself.
Exactly. I mean, you can't be overly focused on what the other teams are doing at that point. You've just got to make sure that you put yourself as far ahead as humanly possible.
And that'll be the key.
Exactly.
All right, let's talk about some of the players and how they're doing thus far. Wait a minute, hold on, Frank. You forgot about the West. I apologize. First in the West, the Mammoth.
Oh, be a good one. Looking at the standings as they currently sit, I'm going to say by the end of this weekend we're going to have Colorado at the top, followed by Edmonton. Followed by Vancouver, and then, sorry, I'm going to say Calgary's going to be dropping towards the bottom. That's just my first best guess based on the results from the first couple of weeks of the season and my impressions of the team.
What do you think, Gary?
I'm pretty much in agreement. I think Colorado will be in first place by the end of this weekend. Calgary in last, I guess so. I really that's such a tight division. That all you need is one bad weekend on a double weekend, and that could be the end of that.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's not a lot of room for error. Your best goal is to try to win out. That's really all you can do at this point, is really try to do the best you can, kick as much ass as you possibly can in the opportunities that are given to you, and lock it up as quickly as you possibly can.
No, I don't know if it'd be Vancouver in last or Calgary in last. That all depends on the way the game's outcome. But I don't think there's going to be much change in the top there. I think Colorado is going to be out there.
Now, as far as the players are concerned.
Yes, sir.
offensively, you got guys like, tell me a bit about Adam Jones in Colorado. What makes him so special?
Adam Jones. Oh, wow. He's a really good, solid player. He can turn it up when he really, really has to. He's remarkably consistent. In his 2013 and the 2012 regular seasons, he had 72 and 76 points. This is only his third season in the league, so he's still a relatively new and relatively unknown face for most of the people in the East. This kid, though, he brings it. It's pretty much all you can really say about a lot of these guys is they're game in, game out. These guys are balls to the wall. They will play this game until they can't play it anymore. They'll be out there on walkers if they could. But Adam Jones is one of those guys that you can never count out. You turn your back on him for a second, and he's gone, and you're gonna miss him.
Now Garrett equals him in points. They both have 10 points, but Garrett didn't have as many games. Colorado played twice, while of course Toronto only played once, and they both have 10 points.
Mm-hmm.
How big a game was that for Garrett Billings? Is that something? I know that he's always been a great scorer and he's always put up points, but is this extra special for him, that game that he played against Calgary?
I'd like to think so. It's a big statement game for him, just based on the fact that he's coming out and he's saying, yeah, I scored a lot of goals last year, but guess what? I can be a setup guy as well. You know, that's I think, important.
It's also to show when things are in double and triple teaming that he's still able to maneuver, still able to be viable, and still able to make points.
Well, that's the thing. I think Garrett's always had incredible lacrosse sense, and that game goes to prove it. Like you mentioned, Gary, being doubled and tripled like that, he's still able to thread a pass through it and find an open player. That's important. That is going to make people sit up and reevaluate, because they've seen him play for the past few seasons. They're going to have to reevaluate that now, because he's just shown you that he's got a whole new set of skills, and he's got a whole new level of danger to him.
And by him doing the setups, it also opens up more people to do scoring, which is going to divide that out, the defense.
Yeah, I'll be honest. When the Rock first picked him up in 2010, I wasn't 100% sold. But he, in the past couple of years, he's really turned me around on that. So,
well, he's been the most consistent thing on that team.
Yep.
And that's a good thing, right?
Definitely.
Now, the thing is, I hadn't actually had an opportunity to see him play a lot or to learn a lot about him because he played out in BC, right? I didn't actually really get exposed to him until 2010, but he finished 2005. He finished with 104 points in the BCLA Junior League with the Burnaby Lakers. So, that should have been a tip off right there that this kid, if he wants to, can just explode. I'm really glad now that the Rock did pick him up. I'm really glad they gave him the opportunity. His first couple of seasons, 2010, 2011 weren't that great. He's 83 and 75 points. But, his breakout season was 2012 when he had 114 points. It was 32 goals and 82 assists, which was just awesome.
And he set that record in Buffalo, wasn't it, 15 points in a game?
I think so, yeah.
Which is just unheard of when they had 16 goals.
Yeah, exactly. He was in on almost every single one of them.
Yeah.
So it's not unusual for him to have a big game.
No, most definitely not. He's certainly capable of it, and that's something that always keeps everybody on your toes. But the games when he goes silent, it's really easy to notice that he's gone silent.
Now, because Colorado's played two games, the standings for points. You have also John Grant now in third, but of course that's in two games as opposed to one. But he's up there with Adam Jones, and he is a less of a scorer, a little bit more of a playmaker. But these guys, what amazes me more than anything is how you know, you can have two guys that play so well and how tough it is to play against them defensively if a team has a couple of guys up front that can really score.
Yeah, the presence of scoring threats up front definitely changes the complexion of the game. The only issue that you run into with that is once people start isolating those players, they may have phenomenal games in the first few games of the season, but you'll find they start to get shut down over the course of the year until people forget about them.
And then they
and the next
do well
14
again.
Season.
Well, in
but
in
it opens
box
up
lacrosse,
new opportunities for other people to step up too.
Exactly.
And in box lacrosse, it's not unusual to see double teaming, and even triple teaming.
Not in the slightest.
Right, which opens up a lot of opportunity for the other guys. So there is kind of the scoring is kind of fluid by virtue of what the opposing team deems should be the defensive target.
Well, that's the problem that you get, right? When you've got two or three scorers, it spreads it. It's harder to isolate.
There you go.
And if you have a good person to thread, even with your triple team, like a Billings, like a Doyle, things like that, that kind of works in your favor. So you can be triple team, still get the ball out, and then you have a lot of more opportunities of scoring.
Any surprising threats? You know, we've got, you know, I'll throw out some names there that are leading. You know, I said John Grant just now, Kyle Buchanan, Sean Evans, Alex Gajic of Vancouver, Jordan Hall, Philadelphia. And we talked a little bit about Stefan LeBlanc, who played for Toronto, Tracy Kaluski, Dan Dawson, Jeff Shattier, Cameron Holding. These guys here, anything?
It's nice to see Tracy Kaluski actually have a good game since he really hasn't had very good games when he was with Buffalo. He right down to being sat for half a season last year. It's nice to see him in a new place and getting another crack at it.
Even though he didn't have a really big game, I was impressed with Reese Dutch. I was impressed with his play. He could have had
Reese,
more.
He's always been lights out, yeah.
Reese is one of those players, though, that lurks in the weeds. He had a reputation of doing that, I think, when he played in Boston as well. He was quiet, and he made contributions, but you never really noticed until the end of the game when you looked at the score sheet. You know, I mean, like, the game that he played, what is it, 4 goals and 2 assists?
There you go.
You know, it's not like he's front of mind when you think about that game. When you think about that game, you're not thinking about Reese Dutch racking up those points. You know what I mean?
Yep.
He sort of flies under the radar. He does make impressive plays, and you know, for some people he stands out, but he's not the focal point of the game. He's the workman at the back that quietly gets everything done.
And the loose balls leaders, we've got Bob Snyder, who's picked up 29 loose balls, and the next one closest to him is Jeff Snyder. That is a very important part of the game, you know, because quite frankly, lacrosse has similarities to basketball, where if you are offensively not necessarily gifted, it is difficult to get a takeaway. In other words, like loose balls are hard to gain because usually every team gets their offensive chance, and if it hits the post and then they get the ball back and run back up the floor, I find that amazing that he has already 29 loose ball victories.
Well, both Snyders are vacuum cleaners, both on face-offs and on loose balls. They're just absolute vacuum cleaners.
Yeah, you're right. They're both first and second, even though they don't play for the same team.
Mm-hmm.
Now, don't forget, yep. Bob's also had 2 games to do that in.
Yeah,
so
that's,
he's averaging
that's
about
great too. 15
a game,
great.
Which puts back with Brody.
Yeah, that narrows the gap a little bit. Yeah, you're right. You're 100% right there.
And that's one of the things that one of the best players in the league never scored the most goals, never had the most assists, but by God, he had the most loose balls in the game. And that sounds funny when you say it like that, but Jim Veltman was king at that sort of thing. Scoop was just absolutely unbelievable.
Scoop was incredible on that, yeah.
You know, and it was his incredible sense of knowing where the ball was going off the boards. I remember I remember seeing him during the warm-up once at the Air Canada Center, and he knew the carpet was buckled in one of the corners, but after the warm-up, he spent an additional five to ten minutes out there just throwing the ball into the corner different ways to see where it would go. And by God, during the game, if something didn't happen and he was there and the ball took a funny hop, and he was there before the ball was. But that's how intensely well he got to know the carpet in that 5 to 10 minutes after everybody else had gone off before after warm-ups.
So, and that helps in retrieving loose balls.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely.
Sure.
He was playing wall ball with the carpet on the floor in the corner.
There you go. Another interesting aspect in the game and a key component of the game of which Bob Snyder has won, again, he's played twice as many games, are face-offs. Face-offs are very critical, obviously, because of what I said before, and that is that, you know, there's a high percentage of offensive opportunities that exist strictly because of possession.
Exactly. If you've got a man that's winning them at the percentages that both Snyders are, that's a boon to any team. And it's one of the reasons I did as well as they did last year was the fact that they had ace guys working the faceoff for them.
Go ahead, repeat what you said.
I believe that Jeff Snyder is probably the best faceoff man in the game, period. And it has been for a number of years.
He may have one challenger, and that I think is a player from Rochester, Dylan Evans, is I think the only other guy this year that may be able to challenge him, but we'll see how that goes. His stats from the first game might just be a fluke.
Then there's Thornburg.
Yep, Thornburg's not bad at 50%. Him and Jeremy Thompson are both decent on the faceoff. Stephen Hoare used to be king at that sort of thing when he was back in Rochester, but he seems to have slipped a little bit. I don't know if it's because...
He looked pretty good. He looked pretty good in game one, but he was actually winning some against Jeff Snyder.
Yeah, I mean, when you're up against Snyder, really, you got to take what you can get, right?
Oh, exactly. Exactly. Every victory is tenfold.
And here's a stat that I find interesting always in sports, and that is, of course, penalty minute leaders. Now, in lacrosse, there is some fighting. There was a fight at the end of the game with the Toronto Rock and the Calgary Roughnecks, which was, you know, pursued by the captain of the Roughnecks. Or more or less to make a statement either on behalf of his team to his team or a direct statement to the Toronto Rock that they didn't like the way they lost and, you know, basically sending a message. In lacrosse, describe for us fighting and what kind of tool it is. And take a couple of minutes each. Start with you, Aaron, and give us your definition of fighting.
My definition of fighting. fighting is usually as a result of a punishable offense that somebody on the other team commits against one of your own players. So if you're going to be a jerk and you're going to butt-end one of our guys or cross-check somebody low, below the kidney pads, I'm going to drop them with you just because. You know, that is cause for. I mean, fighting can be used to inspire a team to get them pumped up, yes. But I find a lot of fights in lacrosse usually come out of the play. I don't recall, and Gary, you can correct me because you've seen just as many games as I have. I don't recall the last time I saw a manufactured fight. I remember seeing a couple pissed off guys going at each other, but I don't remember somebody deliberately sending somebody out onto the floor, other than maybe Buffalo, to start some crap when they didn't need to.
Yeah, no, Buffalo's the only one that comes to mind, and...
I mean, and that's really what it boils down to. It's fighting is it's a part of the game, just in the same way that fighting is a part of hockey. But for me, lacrosse fights don't tend to come out of that sort of thing. All the fights that I've seen in Junior B and Junior A, all the fights that I've seen in Senior A, it wasn't like they picked the guy and sent him out on the floor and said, go. With the exception of one fight, and that was Pat Campbell versus Tim O'Brien. Brampton Excel.
Oh, that was magical. That was something to be seen.
Now, Paddy Campbell, for those people that don't know, Paddy Campbell used to play goal for the Rock. But he played for the Peterborough Lakers during the summer. And Tim O'Brien was also was the designated enforcer, kind of, sort of, for The Rock, and played for the Brampton Excelsiors. One game, Patty decided he was going to dress up as a D-man and deliberately went on the floor to pick a fight with Tim, just because. The only reason I can say is goalie. But it was one of the most epic tilts I've ever seen. That's about the only time I've seen a manufactured and staged fight. The rest of the time, it's usually come out of the play.
So, Gary, anything else you want to add on the subject of fighting?
Well, the one thing is, in hockey, you get a bunch of scrums happening at the end of every whistle. The beauty of the lacrosse fight is you don't get any scrums, because if you want to go, we're going to go. And it means we're going to take our helmets off, our gloves off, our elbow pads off, and we're going to go. Plus, we're not sliding. So it eliminates a whole lot of nonsense that you'll see in hockey. Is that if you're going to play that way, you better be serious about fighting, because it's going to happen.
Well,
it stops a whole lot of the stupidity and the waste of time in hockey at the end of whistles with face washing and...
Yeah, there's a lot less of that, but you know, there was that one moment in the game, you know, where I don't know, maybe there should have been a penalty on the play. Is I'm not a big fan of when people grab a helmet and twist somebody's head, you know, using the helmet to do that. I can understand, you know, pulling the helmet off, but actually not trying to take the helmet off, but literally try to twist a person's neck and head. That part I saw, and I didn't like that, and I felt there should have been a penalty on that play, because I think it's kind of dangerous a little bit. Or maybe I'm not, I don't know what I'm talking about. Maybe you guys can voice your opinion on that, on guys dragging someone's head with the helmet as opposed to just plainly ripping it off.
Yeah,
no, I agree. I think it should be like football. There should be a face masking penalty if you're doing something like that.
Yeah, and that's what I never did like that in lacrosse, and I always thought that. Because I've seen sometimes when a guy's running, and I've seen a guy do that, and some really bad damage can happen. But you know, these guys, like you said, they're real warriors, right? And they've gone through it before, and they'll go through it again. You know, that's just the way it is, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, in general, dragging somebody around by the face mask is considered, as it is, I think, in most sports, a chicken shit move.
Exactly.
It's not to do. It's you know. You're just inviting something bad to happen later, because karma's a bitch.
Yeah,
which goes back to your point before of, you know, the low cross checks or things like that. That would be a reason that we're going to be fighting.
Exactly.
Yeah, and the unprotected lower extremities being a target.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in general, at least I found in my experience, both watching and playing. Flashes and hacks anywhere between the shoulder, where you've got pads, all the way down to the waist is generally okay. Not necessarily encouraged, but you know, it's not an offense punishable by fisticuffs. Put it that way.
Yeah, because what we're talking about is, and we all know this to be true because you've mentioned it a couple of times already. That's why I find you know, penalty minutes interesting, because. You know, fights are usually, you know, manifestations of penalties that aren't called.
Yes. If there's one thing lacrosse players tend to be good at, it's self-regulating.
There you go.
If, you know, if you have one guy acting like a jackhole, somebody will take it up with him.
And bury him.
Hopefully.
There
but
you
in
go.
A nice way.
Oh, yeah, in a nice way. In an embarrassing nice way.
Well, we are Canadian.
What are you doing, a commercial? Okay.
We'll say please and thank you. But
there you go. Power play goals. You don't really get a lot of them, even though there are a few penalties called. It's kind of funny when you consider the relationship between, you know, power plays and goals. It seems like and how many goals are scored in the game. It seems to me that defenses in lacrosse, and from what I've seen and what I've experienced, it's amazing how much possession they actually get. And why is that?
Well, I guess it's like rope-a-dope. Once you get the ball, you really don't want to let it go, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to eat it if you have to. And then the easiest way to make sure the other team doesn't score, rag the ball for 30 seconds and dump it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was going to say, by its very nature, that's usually the way that penalty kills work, is unless you do something stupid and you give up the ball, you're going to be able to rag it for a full possession and knock a quarter off the penalty time. So unless you got the ball right off the jump and you capitalize on that early, you may not get a point.
Okay. Now, shots on goal. There are a lot of guys that take a lot of shots, and the percentages of them scoring are not that high. But it appears that, for the most part, the guys that are taking the shots are scoring most of the goals, because in the leaders are Adam Jones, Kevin Growley, John Grant Jr., Garrett Billings, and Dane Smith. So, you know, but there are some guys that are more high percentage shooters. In your minds, who are the guys that are going to be the guys who are the higher percentage shooters in your minds?
Oh, that's a good one. Gary, any ideas?
Wow.
Well, put it a different way. There are some players that are certain positions on the floor, you know, like within, let's say, 18, 20 feet, where you don't want – there's certain guys you just don't want them to get the ball and get a free look, you know. And that's the biggest thing about lacrosse is, like basketball, if you get a free look, you know, the percentages of that shot going in are much higher, right? I mean, it goes without saying, right? And some players are better at putting themselves in the position. Like, for example, one of the goals we saw against Calgary, which I found amazing, was the one that was behind, like the defender was standing in front of, I'm sorry, I don't remember the player that did it, but it was a goal against the Rock. The one where he threw it around the legs of the defender and the goalie didn't have a chance to react, and it was short side in the goal before he even had a chance to react, because he didn't know, he couldn't see that the shot was being, you know, he didn't see the swing of the stick towards the back of the defender, and it was short side before he could do anything.
I think I know the one you're talking about there. Yeah, it
didn't
screens
that was
or,
awesome. It was a screenshot essentially,
yeah.
But it was a low ball, and you know, as big as the goalies are and as small as the nets are, it's a testament to the players and what kind of accuracy they have. And I guess it's okay if you didn't answer that question. Later on in the season, I'll answer it myself. The more I get to see these players and get to understand them specifically, there are a lot of players that are very tricky, you know, fast with their shot or tricky fast with their feet. And lacrosse lends itself well to that, because unlike other sports, and we've talked about this before, you know, in hockey, everything comes from the ice. And when it doesn't, it's a big deal, you know, because normally that's not how it works. But lacrosse, you know, it's 360 degrees of motion that a person can use the stick in, where the ball's going to come from. And that's a big shopping list of where the goalie has to pay attention to, where the ball's coming from or when it's going to be shot.
No, I mean, most definitely. The just to answer your question, the player that I don't want shooting on me, I'll make it a short list. I'm going to go with my top three. It's going to be Grant Billings and Dane Smith from Buffalo. Those are the three guys I don't ever want to see bearing down on me, because they frighten the hell out of me. I mean, John Grant Jr. has been around the league for so long, but he's still got some of the softest hands and one of the most accurate shots I've ever seen. Garrett can wire them. He can dial you up long distance, or he can do it in close. Dane Smith is just a bull. He'll go through you if he needs to get the ball into the net.
So, and Christopher was saying the exact same thing I was. I'll read Christopher. We're down to our last nine. I can't believe how quickly the show has gone by. I'll just say his quote. Chris said, in lacrosse, it frickin' comes from anywhere.
Yeah.
He says,
oh, yeah, literally anywhere.
And your master, that would be Colin Doyle from behind the back, and Billings also shooting behind the back shots, and, you know, any direction they're facing, you know, you're
Christopher wants to ask you also if you guys know who Paul Parnell is.
Paul Parnell?
Yeah.
No idea.
No idea?
I've heard the name.
maybe. Well, you can Google it, but we're down to the last 30 seconds of the program.
Yeah, he stopped playing before I was born, so, you know.
There you go. Well, Christopher's a little long in the tooth like me, maybe. I don't know. I think he's younger than I am, but still probably older than you. Probably older than both of you. Anyway, having said that, we're down to the last few seconds of the program. Gary Grube, as always, thank you for joining us on the program. We'll be back on again next week for your information. Same time, 9 to 11 p.m. here on Blog Talk Radio. And, of course, my sidekick for going on our second year now, Aaron William Freeland. Aaron, thank you very much for being on the program.
Thank you for having me, Frank.
Always
thanks
my
a lot, Frank.
Pleasure. And you're welcome, both of you gentlemen. You've been listening to Blog Talk Radio, Candid Frank Live, National Lacrosse League Talk. Welcome to the program. We'll see you again next Wednesday, Monday and Friday, CFL football. See you on Friday. Chris will be back. This time you'll hear him talk. Bye.